Home is more important today than it's ever been. So if you're looking for the right place or trying to take advantage of those low interest rates with a refi, you should know that there's a nationally recognized mortgage originator right here in the Triad. Ashley McKenzie Sharp with Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation has been included in the top 200 loan originators in the country for 8 consecutive years. Providing personal service with experience, speed, and satisfaction is her number one priority. Trust Ashley to provide you with everything you need for a simple, rewarding home loan experience. And as a sponsor of the Triad Podcast Network, if you text or call Ashley at 336-575-9448 for your mortgage quote today, just mention the podcast, and upon receiving your quote, we'll send you a $25 local business gift card. 336-575-9448 to reach Ashley McKenzie Sharp with Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation. Ashley McKenzie Sharp, NMLS ID number 100776, is a licensed mortgage originator in North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Florida. Fairway Independent Mortgage Corporation, NMLS ID number 2289, is an equal housing lender.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to another real estate edition here on the Triad Podcast Network. Our real estate expert is Blake Ginther from the Ginther Group right here in Winston-Salem. If you want to find any of our old episodes, it is a great time to be listening to our real estate podcast because it is an unprecedented time right now in local real estate. So if you want to find our archives, listen to more from Blake, you can do so by searching Triad Podcast Network wherever you like to listen to your podcast. Also, check out our community spotlight. We got a chance to visit with another local business owners, or two of them actually, from Village Fabric Shop. So every month with the Ginther Group, we do our real estate show with Blake, and then we do a community spotlight where they get an opportunity to tell the story of local business owners right here in the Triad. We spent a lot of time, Blake, talking about this unique market that we're in right now where homes are selling like hotcakes and it's not taking very long. Mm-hmm. And there's multiple offers all over the place. It's a great time to be a seller. And so we focused a lot on the perspective of the seller and how attractive it might be to sell your home at this time. And it still is. But let's focus on if you're the buyer, because it's not as easy and it could be frustrating. And I want to get into your thoughts on how do you win the home? How do you win the bidding war? You're competing against multiple people in most cases for a home that you want to buy. How do you get the upper hand? So yeah, let's focus a little bit on the buyer side, but first, are we still going through the same thing that we've been going through over the last few months? Where is it accurate to still say that, yeah, it's still very much a market that favors the seller and we're still seeing multiple offers all over the place and homes not lasting on the market very long?
Oh, for sure. We're in the same market. Not the same way, by the way. There are more homes coming on, but they're going under just as quickly. So the inventory is staying, which is incredibly low. Still, in most price points, we're talking weeks, right? We're measuring in weeks, whereas for years, we measured in months. Back in 2010, we almost measured in years. but right now, we measure in weeks. And there are still, you know, anywhere from 1 to 6 weeks inventory in most price points. So when there's that low, right? And when, again, just to recap, right? 3 months or less is a seller's market. 4 to 6 is a level market. Anything over 6 months inventory is a buyer's market. And the biggest difference in our market now is the higher price points, which had historically always had higher inventory. I think it's partly because of construction kind of coming to a halt. But even the higher price points, the inventory is low. So even sellers who own a home above 500, mm-hmm. that was always in the 4 to 6 or 6 months plus, and it's now being measured in weeks. So, and we're in a multiple offer scenario on a 7-figure home. That was the face you saw me make when I got off the phone. I'm dealing with, and that tells you something, right? That tells you that inventory in all price points is low. And so, to your question, like to us discussing buyers, what is it taking to win? And how have they adjusted to this market, or how do they need to adjust to this market? And I told you right before you clicked record that there are people who've mentioned listening to this podcast. I'm working with a buyer who we were getting ready to go over the terms. And she said, I know, I already listened to your podcast. I know I need to do, which I thought was so cool. And I'll say it again, it's that due diligence monies, you know, purchase price are always going to be number one buyers, but the due diligence monies are everybody, anybody who knows me knows I overuse the phrase actions and words. Actions and words, words are lovely, and actions matter more, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And the actions of a buyer are purchase price and due diligence. Due diligence is that initial commitment money that a buyer writes, and they write it out to the seller, and they get it back at closing. They do not get it back should they decide to terminate for any or no reason. And they don't have to disclose if they choose to terminate. But it is essentially their initial commitment money to the seller to take their home off the market. And Adam, that used to be $500 to $1,000, for a long, long time. And then when the market started getting tighter, it changed from $1,000 to like $1,500 to $2,000 to $2,500. I'd say the average due diligence is $5,000 right now. Oh, the average. So
people are risking, they could be risking up to $5,000 of their own money to hope that they take it all the way through to closing.
The average, there are people who are risking, we had $20,000 on a $70,000 townhome due diligence, $20,000 due diligence.
Oh my gosh.
So
almost a third.
That's right. So they're committed. Right. They're buying that. They're buying that unit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the challenge is, and we used to joke, it's back when the market was a seller's market back in 2010, there was always that one seller who would cut everybody off at the knees and just come in, and the house might have been worth 350, but they priced it at 300 because they were just tired and they had enough equity and they could. So they sold. Mm-hmm. But all the other sellers who priced it at 350, who maybe weren't in the same financial situation, were like, you know, they had some choice words for that seller. Well, guess what? We're in a reverse market where there's always these one or two buyers who will come in with ridiculously high due diligence and very much strong terms that will oftentimes trump all of the other buyers. If I'm a buyer, don't let that persuade what your comfort zone is, right? You don't have to, you can, but just understand that there's a high probability, especially under 250, that there's going to be this one buyer who's going to just blow it all up with something, you know, really high and something that you just go, congratulations. So the question a buyer has to ask themselves on every deal, what's the price? It's bad English, but it's the question I ask all the time. I think I've probably said on this podcast, at what price will you not be disappointed that you don't get this home? Sorry, Mom. I know that's poor grammar. At what price will you
that
not
like,
be
that
disappointed?
That's like a quadruple negative,
I think. It is. It's terrible grammar. But I ask it that way for a reason, because at what price will you not be disappointed if you don't get this home is that, what's your number? You know, if the home is listed at 200 and you bid 210 and I call you and you say, you know, and well, darn it, I would have, if I had known I wasn't going to get it at 210, I would have bid 215. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, then 215 is your number.
Right.
You know, not that you won't be upset, because of course you'll be upset if you don't get it, but you won't kick yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So let me ask you then a scenario about due diligence to maybe reinforce how much of a valuable arrow that can be in the quiver of a buyer. So let's say you've got buyer A, buyer B. Mm-hmm. They both offer asking, you know, they both offer the purchase price at whatever it was listed for. So buyer A comes in with more due diligence money. That's not going, that, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's not going to affect how much the seller gets in the transaction. It's all the same at the end of the closing. But this is a way for the buyer to show that, hey, I'm not going to back out of this thing.
Like, correct.
I'm committed to this, and you're not going to have to go backwards and go through the process all over again.
Correct. And buyers, and I just had this exact conversation, buyers go, so I'm risking that. Yeah. Oh yeah, you are, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if the home has repair items, if the home doesn't appraise, you do not, I have to repeat this usually like five times. You do not get it back. You will not get it back. If you decide to terminate for any or no reason, the home has structural problems or it doesn't appraise and you can't come up with the cash, the extra cash that you have to now bring because the home appraised for $10,000 less than the purchase price. And your lender goes, hey, you can buy this home, but you're going to need to bring $10,000 more money in addition to your down payment. And there are people writing offers that say they'll pay over appraisal price by X amount. So that's the challenge too. And I have buyers who can do it, but aren't necessarily willing to. And I get it. But you need to know as a buyer, you need to know what you're up against. And I, Adam, truly, you've seen MAMES, I'm sure. Full price is like 5% off because the average price is 105% almost, right? So full price is, and we're starting to see agents underprice almost on purpose.
Yeah.
Because it's going to go bananas. So just know and I had a buyer, seller and a buyer say, well, I'm not willing to go above asking. I'm not comfortable paying above offer listing price. And I said to the, she listens to this podcast, so I'm not going to mention any names, but she
did tell me. Thank you for listening, by the way.
And I said to her, as politely, gently as I could, because she's like one of the nicest humans on earth, that she might not be buying a house. And she knows it. And she's kind of sad because she knows that she might not then be able to buy a home.
Yeah.
They're looking out more rural. So maybe they'll get lucky. Maybe they'll be able to get a house at full ask. The funny thing is, though, when we go to sell their home, if that's his expectations, then that's just not going to be the reality. We're going to get him over asking.
Right.
And that's my thing was like, well, is he going to be okay if we get him above asking, or will he only take full ask?
Right. And we've done this in a previous podcast. The difference in your monthly payment from buying a home at asking versus buying it at 5% above asking, pretty nebulous, right?
So minimal. It's very minimal. I mean, the interest rates are still in the threes. Everybody's now, the whole thing is like they're going to creep up. and they might. And honestly, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world as long as they creep. Okay, so let's squash the whole, it's going to be 6% next year. The president said so. No way. Not happening. Squashed. I mean, it can't happen. It really can't. So interest rates creep up, and heaven forbid they're 4% in probably a year. That's still so minimal. 4% is like basically $4 a dollar, for every 1,000 you add, right?
Yeah.
It's minimal. So you add 10,000, that exact example, you add $10,000. So you're, in theory, you're adding close to $40 a month.
Yeah.
For $10,000, you could get the house or not over a few Starbucks coffees a month.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, what happens to the due diligence money that gets paid, but then the buyer doesn't actually close on the home?
Seller keeps it.
Seller just pockets it?
Seller pockets it.
Okay. Interesting.
And that's, people are like, I think the contract's going to change because what if sellers are kind of, some sellers, not all sellers. In fact, very rare, very few of the sellers we've worked with have been jerks, right? Have been like, I'm not doing anything. I got $10,000. Like, in fact, I kind of hope you walk away so I can take this $10,000.
That's kind of what I was getting at, what you're explaining here. Yeah.
I have never in my career represented a seller. I'm going through my mind to make sure I'm not lying. But I believe I have never represented a seller who has behaved that way. Because ultimately they've made plans, right? They typically sellers. Now I have had sellers who legitimately decide they don't want to move. Right. And then they go, how do I get rid of them? And I'm like, sorry, you can't, you're stuck with them. So they become jerks in hopes. And by the way, that's happened to me one handful of times.
Yeah.
And they've never successfully been, they've been horrible to these buyers. And they've never successfully gotten them to terminate. It's like, it's funny how that has always happened. Anyways, side note. So yes, Adam, to your point, sellers could behave that way. And if you're a buyer and you're putting $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 down, mm-hmm. you could go, well, man, there's no motivation for them to make repairs.
Right.
And that's true. There is very little motivation. I just had sellers, the buyer bought the home, wanted a three-car garage. It's a two-car garage. Decided, you know what? I really want a three-car garage. I'm going to terminate. Lost $3,500. We go back under contract, second time, for $10,000.
Wow. Yeah.
And by the way, way better price the second time. It's just funny how that worked out for the sellers. So they made $3,000, and then they got more money. And the win for all, because the buyer wanted to go elsewhere, other than that $3,000 he'll never get back. So the sellers ended up still making a bunch of repairs. They didn't have to. Mm-hmm. They just wanted to be good humans.
Wow. It's fascinating, and it's a different world. I mean, you were talking about what due diligence money used to be back in the day. The house that we're currently living in, we bought it at the end of 2014. I think we paid less than $1,000 in due diligence for our home.
Yep.
And that was, you know, almost 7 years ago now. So, how much does, again, we're talking to Blake Ginther about ways that buyers can try to gain the upper hand in all of these multiple offer scenarios. And we said purchase price and due diligence money. Those are two very, very important things. And those are the actions that are sometimes going to speak the loudest.
Yep.
Most times speak the loudest. How much is timing? How much does it matter being the first offer, being the quickest one to make the offer? How much does it matter when you come in with your offer after something goes up for sale?
Okay, so it's funny. It's so important, but there's two versions of timing.
Okay.
So timing to the offer and then timing to the seller's ideal move-out date. So I think buyers are very smart to try to get in right away, try to write a super clean, over-asking offer with all of the ideal terms. You find out what their ideal date is, which is the second aspect of timing. When does the seller want? Maybe you get smart and you offer them seller possession, right? Free rent back, so to speak. You know, you get clever in the utilization of possession for the seller. You write it as quick as you can. And what some people are still doing is putting the proverbial, gun to the head and saying, my offer expires.
Yeah.
CLB.
Yeah.
and it's tough. Sellers typically don't feel a lot of pressure right now.
Right.
But they also want to be respectful. So what ends up happening is they counter something and then they get a multiple offer, or they get multiple offers before it even expires. And they say, thank you so much for your offer. We're calling for highest and best by blank. So to your point, if you can be quick, then.
But you better make it attractive. If you want to be quick, if you want to be first, you better make it a offer they can't refuse type scenario, right?
Correct. And full asking isn't even necessarily enough. In fact, and we had an offer last night come in at 95% of asking. And granted, it's a high price point. It doesn't matter in our current market. And we already have, by the time this comes out, it will be fine. We already have several other interested parties. So coming in below asking, and then they immediately corrected it, right? And immediately came back to full ask. And then did what they should have done beforehand, which is find out their ideal dates and said, okay, we'll work with that too. But by then we already have several interested parties and your deadline didn't work. But if they had done it from the get-go, right? If they had done either at asking or above asking, found out our ideal dates, given us ideal everything, then we'd be under contract. Probably.
So talk to me about the second part of the timing. So we talked about the timing of the offer. Now let's talk about the timing of closing, right? That's what you're talking about in terms of the second piece to this?
Yeah. I think
What's more attractive? What are the ways to get a seller's attention in terms of what kind of timing you want to? Does it depend on the seller's situation, or how do you sway a seller based on timing of closing?
So, we had a listing that had 70 some showings and 30 some offers a couple weeks.
Jeez.
We were laughing because like a handful of agents actually found out what the ideal timing was. Like one handful out of 70 some and 30 some offers. I mean, that's the most important thing. Find out. It's the question I ask to every buyer, every listing agent. If I'm representing a buyer, if I have, you know, interested parties, I go, so at what, you know, besides price, what else is important to your sellers? You know, do they want to lease back? Do they want a quick close? And if it's vacant, they probably want a quicker close. Maybe. You never know. So I think that's an important question that every agent should ask. I'm going to tell you that maybe less than 10% of them do. You know, besides price, wow, what else matters to your sellers? And then make it happen. If they want possession, most sellers want possession, but they want you to close sooner. I want you to close in a normal time frame. It doesn't have to be rushed. A normal time frame, and then give them possession until blank.
And I guess part of that, I mean, a big factor, because we're going to get to this in a later podcast, maybe next month, but a transaction that you and I are working on. You have to ask the question to the seller, right? Because when they want to close might depend on if they're living there, if the house is empty. Mm-hmm. If they already are, if they're getting ready to move, or if they still need time to find a house.
Right.
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 But that's part of what you're trying to do if you're representing a buyer.
That's right. Feel it out. And you know, most listing agents will give you the answer. You see a lot of jokes, a lot of people talk about listing agents, you know, answer the phone. Well, I'm just going to put this out there. Okay. Listing agents are getting blown up like they've never been blown up. And everybody goes, listing agents, you know, all these funny memes of buyer's agents looking like they've just like literally been through a car wash on the outside of their car, and listing agents like eating bonbons on the couch. No, that's not a thing. That is not a reality. Stop it. Listing agents are working just as hard. It's more frustrating for buyer's agents right now because they're writing more offers. But listing agents, imagine that listing that got 70 some showings and it did get, she only got a handful of calls asking about their ideal dates and times. And that doesn't mean she didn't get thousands of other calls asking her about, oh, I can't get the combination to work. Or, you know, do you have other offers? There's a lot of communication now. So your agent might have to try more than once to find out at what, besides price, what else matters.
Okay, so we've talked about purchase price, due diligence, timing of offer, timing of closing. What else is going to matter to a seller?
Commitment money's price and dates are usually what matters most.
Yeah.
Sometimes personal property. Sometimes sellers are super attached to their fridge. A lot of buyers just assume the fridge stays. If they just bought that fridge and they love that fridge, they might not want you to ask for that fridge. You know, sometimes sellers really want you to take their swing set because they don't want to move it.
Right.
Has anybody ever in the history of the world successfully moved a swing set? Maybe, but I don't know them. And a lot of people don't, depending on if they have kids or not, they might not want, or the ages of their children, they might not want that swing set. Well, in a buyer's market, okay, buyers, you used to be able to ask for that swing set to get moved or taken down. In this market,
you might be stuck with it. Yeah, you might be stuck with it. You've mentioned this in previous episodes, the buyer love letter. Is that a thing right now? Does that help?
Just had this conversation this morning.
Okay. Explain for anyone who's hearing about this this concept for the first time, explain the buyer love letter.
It is so controversial, the love letter.
Really?
Well, it often breaks fair housing laws. Okay, because what do they say in this love letter? That family from Raleigh made a funny video. The husband and wife.
The Holderness family?
Yeah. Yes. So she made a funny video doing both sides of being a realtor. I mean, it was pretty comical and not altogether inaccurate, especially for Raleigh. Right. it was really funny. And it was a lot about the letter. And then she went on to say, but don't say anything that, you know, too personal that could get me in trouble. You know, she's talking about the agent because agents have this fair housing, you know, these fair housing laws that we have to abide by. Our clients want to break them all the time. And I told this client this morning, if you put it in an attachment signed by you, you know, some agents, it's gray. Some agents will forward that attachment on with all of the other attachments, right? With the actual letter. Now, look, agents don't have to send that letter to their clients. And some agents are very adamant about they will not. They will not. Because they want their clients to choose by the numbers, not by the emotions.
Sure.
So, or they'll withhold it and they'll ask their clients, do you want it? And then they'll maybe send it on. I think that's a good compromise. But bottom line is if it's an attachment, right, not in the body of an email. If it's in the body of an email, I feel like, okay, I mean, we could say it's their words, but it kind of looks like it's ours. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But if they write an attachment, a separate Word document letter and sign it, you know, can I send it on if it talks about their kids? I don't know. I think my broker in charge would probably say, please don't, Blake. But the reality is it's not my words, it's theirs. And the listing agent might still not send it on. But Adam, if I'm a buyer in this market, yeah, I'm going to try that. Sure. Tug on the heartstrings.
Any little thing that might help. Yeah.
But be careful. Talk about your dog. Maybe they hate dogs. Talk about your cat. Maybe they hate cats. Talk about your kids. Maybe they weren't able to have kids and it really upsets them. And then
Sure. You never know. Just stick to the things about the house.
I mean, the love letter, if it's a tie game, can sometimes put the folks over the top.
Yeah. You don't know the circumstances under which people are selling the house. So you may bring up something emotional about why you love the house, but it could be something that triggers the opposite emotion for the seller.
Not to go dark, but in times like these, divorce is on the rise. So if you're going to talk about, you know, your lovely marriage and you can't wait to raise your children and these folks are, you know, this house has brought them nothing but pain, specifically around kids and marriage.
Yep. Yeah. You got to be very careful with your words because it could backfire.
It could. But what I'll tell you is the people who often write the letters are the people who do some serious social media stalking. And they typically find out what to say and not to say. And I don't encourage it. I don't do it. I've never been a good social media stalker. Kudos to those of you that are.
We haven't been in position to buy a house. Thankfully we're right now in a home that we love. But I'm glad you were able to share some advice and share some different things people need to consider in their approach. Cause trying to be a buyer right now, I can't even imagine how tough that's got to be, especially if you're in a situation where you need to move, like you need to find a house.
They're the ones winning, Adam. You know who's not winning? Folks who don't. You know, in all honesty, and when I talk to people, in fact, one of the offers, one of the people I've referenced several times in this podcast, she doesn't need to move until late summer. And when we first met, when we first talked, I said, so just FYI, that's probably when you're going to move.
Yeah.
And she said, why? And I said, because you don't need to. You're a want to buyer until then.
Yeah. Because if you're a need to buyer, your actions are going to show that.
Yep.
And when we go back to all the actions we've been talking about on this podcast.
Yep.
Right?
That's correct. And
it might show most of all in your due diligence.
It will. It will.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it doesn't. Oftentimes buyers have to lose several times before they get it. And more importantly, it's not a before they get it. It's a before they need it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They lose. I think I hear agents say that all the time. Well, they needed to lose before they get it. If they need it right away, they probably don't.
Yeah. Yeah. So you'll probably find those need to buyers. If you're a seller, you'll find them. Just the proof will be right there in front of you.
That's right.
So, okay, well, it's fascinating, Blake. This market right now, it's unreal. I mean, every time I drive the route to take my kids to school, driving through our neighborhood, we're seeing more for sale signs going up. But to your point, whether it's a seller or buyer's market is not about how many homes are for sale. It's about inventory. And to just kind of clarify, when you talk about how to measure inventory, measuring inventory is not a number of homes. Measuring inventory is length of time, correct?
It is amount of, so it's a combination, right? It's amount of homes and how long it takes for those homes to sell in the last 30 days.
Right.
So when we say weeks of inventory, right, there's 300 homes, active homes, but there's been 300 sales in the last 30 days. That's 1 month's inventory.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, and that's what is, when I say weeks, that means that in that exact example, right, if there's 300 active homes and there's been 600 sales, well, that's 2 weeks inventory.
Yeah.
It's a half a month.
Okay, my friend. If people like what they heard and they need someone to help navigate all these multiple offer situations, whether they're a seller or a buyer, how can they find you?
Brother, thank you. TheGinterGroup.com, TheGinterGroop.com, or 336-283-8689, 283-8689. I want to say one last thing. I don't want buyers to get this doom and gloom. I can't find my, or it's going to be a brutal process. It really isn't compared to, I mean, certain markets, honestly, I wouldn't want to be a buyer in the Triangle right now, or probably Charlotte. But Winston, look, it's tough. It's tough, but it's not brutal. You can find your home. You will find your home, and you won't be homeless. I promise.
All right. We'll let that be the final word. Well said. Good to talk to you, my friend. Look forward to doing this again next month.
Thanks, man.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode on the Triad Podcast Network. Our mission is simple: provide information, advice, and stories about the people and places that make the North Carolina Triad such a great place to be. You can find us by searching Triad Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much wherever you like to listen. If you like what you heard and want to support the show and those that contribute, we would truly appreciate a rating and review on your favorite podcast app. It helps spread the word along, as do your shares on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, @TriadPodcast. To get in touch with us, simply email info@triadpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.